raise a couple more to the revolution.
We have only three words for you.
Uh-oh.
We're taking over!
The world is alive.
Why not raise a little hay?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to episode 10 of the Q0 Theater Cast. We survived long enough to make double-digit episodes.
Woo!
So exciting for that. This is your host, Artistic Director Dan Pelletier, here today with Artistic Associate Tom Lott.
What's up?
And today's episode, since we're kind of between productions right now, is going to be on the subject of directors. What does a director do? What makes a good director? What makes a bad director? What is it like working with a director? Just directing in general, both from the perspective of director, designers, and actors, as well as just everybody else that works in the theater. So, as I was, I was saying to Tom earlier, the first lecture we were given when I took directing in college was aptly titled, "What the Hell Does a Director Do?" So, Tom, what the hell does a director do?
I think the easiest way to really kind of sum up the director is that they're really the captain of the ship, the driver. They're the ones that are going to be, linking all the ideas together, making sure that there's continuity between everything, creating the structure of the world and the vision of that, just to kind of sum up what all that is.
At least for me, or when I'm explaining to people, I equate directing as kind of like being the head coach on a football team. You make a lot of the big picture decisions. I mean, I jokingly say, I just tell everyone where to stand. But, directing's so much more than that. Yeah, you're right. You're the captain of the ship. You're the, to steal a George W. Bush-ism, you're the decider. To me, that's the ultimate thing you want to be. You make the big decisions. You're the unifying artist. You take everything that all of the other people are bringing and you craft it into one coherent unit, which is the end product. You interpret the script and you put it up on stage. So, Tom, have you had the pleasure of directing anything substantial?
Nothing substantial, small kind of one-act stuff in college, but no full productions yet.
So in your limited experience, what was the challenge and the joy of directing?
A lot of challenge and a lot of joy to it. I think if you're not strong as a director, you're going to find challenges the whole way, and it's not going to kind of really fulfill your vision. And so I think that one of the biggest challenges is being able to communicate with your designers, being able to communicate with your actors, trying to kind of guide them in the direction that you want something to go without just blatantly making the choices for them or hurting their feelings in, the choices that they made. So really trying to guide that politely can be a challenge. But when you get, things that all come together and it pays off and it, you see the vision of what you thought it was going to be and it either matches that or goes way beyond what you thought it was going to be, that's a, there's a lot of joy in it.
So Tom, as an actor, you've had the opportunity to work with a number of directors. As an actor, what makes a director that you want to work with again and again and again?
I think the biggest thing for me with working with a director is their ability to listen and talk through scenes and choices that you're making, instead of just, no, I don't like that. Being like, I like the choice that you made, but not positive it fits, and this is why, I'm kind of leaning against that kind of thing. Being able to have an actual dialogue back and forth as opposed to just, this is what it is.
Yes. I'm very big of the camp that director is not dictator.
Right.
Or puppet master. When I'm directing or when I'm being directed, I don't want the director to shove their hand up the actor's back and pretend they're a ventriloquist dummy and tell you this is exactly what you're going to do and this is how you're going to say it and with this inflection, because I think actors are artists too and we don't want to stifle that. We want them to bring something to the table.
Right.
So
And at the same point, you don't want to go too far in the other direction where you don't have a full vision as to where this character's going or what the scene's doing. If you can't fully guide the actors or designers through this portion, then the pieces aren't going to line up the way that you're hoping that they will.
Right. You do need a concrete vision. You need to be able to communicate that. You need to be able to coach people. And then you also have to be able to, you know, accept that sometimes things aren't going to be exactly how you saw them in your head. But there's nothing wrong with that. I definitely have, you know, worked with a number of artists that struggle with that battle. Right.
So from your side of stuff, yeah. What do you like to see as a director? What makes your job easier coming from the other side?
I love working with actors that are going to make big, bold choices right away, that are going to not be afraid to dive in into the work, that are that take direction well. Again, like I just want to give like a little piece and be like, okay, let's try this a different way, and then they're gonna take that fully and go 100% with that. And same thing, that they're gonna give me a lot to play with, and that we can do there's a lot of back and forth and give and take, and that they're not looking for me to puppet them, or they're just not set in their ways. I have been in an audition where we called somebody back for a role, and they'd played the part before, and they gave a performance, and they did the callback scene, and I'm like, okay, that was good, but can we try this other attempt at it? I just want to see. And they couldn't do it. I'm just like, well, they were good, but they're not going to, I don't know if they're exactly right for what I'm doing, and they're not going to take direction, and they're not moldable. I'm looking for an actor that's clay, that's already kind of in a shape, and then we're going to work together to carve it and put it together.
Right.
I'm looking for designers that are going to be the same way, that, again, they're going to give me a lot, and I can yay or nay things, and that they'll be able to translate my thoughts and visions, and that they're not going to be so stuck on something and not being able to justify things. I think that's my biggest thing as a director, or just as a theater person in general. I hold the playwright in the highest regard, and the text to me of a piece is sacred.
Right.
You can make any decision you want as long as you can justify it with something from the text. Making a decision because I think it'd be cool is bad directing and designing. So if I go into a project and I'm like, oh, that's not how I wanted to approach it, but you can point out to me why that makes sense textually, I might be able to be swayed on something. And I approach that from all sides of the table, whether I'm acting, directing, or designing for somebody else. I want it to be, if it's in the script and that makes sense, I can run with it. If you're pulling it out of your butt or just trying to recreate something somebody else did, I'm gonna have a problem with that.
Right. And I'm assuming you're looking for a substantial text backup, not just it doesn't say that it's not that.
Most, 9 times out of 10, yes. Every now and then, sometimes there are holes in scripts that you do need to fill in,
right,
where you have to go, well, it doesn't answer that question, so we get to answer it.
Right.
I try not to use that justification more often than I do use that justification, but I'm not going to say hard and fast, no, you can't just fill in the blanks, or go, well, it doesn't say I didn't do that. Right. Let's look at the other end of the spectrum. Like, what have you had experiences with? Again, we never know who's listening to the podcast, and we know there's a lot of fragile egos in the theater world. So let's tread lightly. But have you worked with directors that you would say were less than enjoyable or not great collaborators? And if so, what made that a particular challenge?
Yeah, I have. I've worked with directors that I thought have been great, and I've worked with some directors that have been less than what I would have liked from directors. I think from the not so great side of stuff, I've had directors that'll just kind of be like, all right, you enter from here and you exit from that point, and anything else is up to you. I'm not a huge fan of that because you're trying to create specific scenes and trying to create specific images that the audience is going to see within these scenes that's going to hit point for them, thinking about sight lines and use of space and all that other stuff. As an actor, I'm typically not thinking about that. When I'm in there, I'm just trying to kind of like either drive towards the person or away from them, not so much thinking about where I'm landing, the sight lines, that kind of stuff. So having somebody that can kind of guide that into a more specific area is helpful. And there's also times where I've come into scenes and just not known what my character's doing. And, you know, I have to have that kind of, you know, be able to have that conversation with the director about where am I going? Or I think this is probably where it's going, but I'm not fully solid on that. Can we talk this out a little bit?
Yeah, I remember, again, I don't want to name names, but I do. Marjorie will tells a good story of time she was in a show and she's on stage for, you know, like 20 minutes and her character doesn't say anything. And she's like, I feel like I would say something. Why is my character silent? And the director was just like, because you don't have any lines. It's like, no, that's not a, that's not a thing. And it doesn't help her as an actor. Right. Even, I mean, it's sometimes it's okay to go, I don't know the answer to that question, but let me get back to you. But, like, eventually you need to help the actor solve that problem.
Right. And then from a design perspective, I mean, there has to be a vision as to where it's going. There has to be kind of a theme or an element that the director's trying to tie in. And that's not just, well, this company did it this way, so I want that exact same thing. It's being able to have conversations about, well, this is a kind of cool influence. What can we do to spin that or take, you know, I like seeing this. Let's put our spin or let's change it and let's do our version of it kind of thing.
I'm not a fan of copycatting. I've worked with people that are like, oh, you know, just have them watch the Broadway. And I'm like, if I trace the Mona Lisa, does that make me Da Vinci? No. It doesn't.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Like, so there's, it's not just recreating. And it's the same thing where if you trace what I drew, you're not creating your own thing. You're tracing my work. And I, again, if I wanted to play that part, I would.
Right.
I want the actor to be able to have input on things and to be able to create and say things. So I do, you know, I have worked with directors that, I think you're right, both ends of the spectrum. Directors that give you way too much and don't leave room for you to actually apply your craft and are just looking for you to be an animatron at Disney World on Spaceship Earth. Or the director, you know, I've worked with a director that the only thing she gave two farts about was diction. It was, you made your entrance and then she just let you know if she could understand the words that were coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
She didn't give you blocking. She didn't give you character notes. She is just like, you're not the meat, you know, we were doing Shakespeare. So it's like the meter's a little off at that point.
Yeah.
You're not hitting every syllable in Juliet. It's like, okay, great.
Right.
I'm glad you have a degree in literature, but this is drama.
Right.
Please give me some more guidance. Tell me I don't understand. Or, I mean, and I've worked with some directors that I'm just like, you don't know what this show's about.
Yeah.
And they're just wrong. And I think that doesn't necessarily make a bad director, but you know, sometimes they just get misguided.
And along those same lines, being able to, as a director, you know, admit, I didn't make a good choice here, or this isn't working, and going back and reevaluating. For example, I was in a show in college that we were running the show, and we were, you know, getting pretty close to going into Tech Week on it, and it wasn't feeling right. The opening, you know, was one of the first things that we did, and it just wasn't working the way that, you know, everyone had hoped it was going to be. And then the director just kind of, you know, ended the rehearsal and she just sat in the theater for a while and then drove home and came back the next day and said, nope, this isn't working. I broke the laws of the universe that I set down. We're redoing it. And then we redid it and it worked beautifully and led, you know, very well into the rest of the piece. So being able to admit that there's a mistake there or that something isn't working is a sign of, for me, a great director and being able to reevaluate things.
At that same time, though, I feel you have to be able to recognize that early in the rehearsal process. Early enough. I loathe and shudder when I hear stories of people saying, like, I'm like, oh, that moment was a little weak. Yeah, well, we re-blocked it after dress rehearsal. It's like, right. Well, if you've gotten to dress rehearsal and, like, you were still having, like, and you had to restage an entire number because you made mistakes earlier.
Right.
You need to be able to recognize, I mean, I've done them, like, with New Space, we had that rehearsal where I'm like, I screwed this up. Right. Let's go back to what you guys were doing originally because I over-directed this. I took this in the wrong place and it no longer works or feels organic. Let's go back to square one.
Right.
And we've since fixed it and it was a lot stronger. But like, yeah, you got to be able to admit you're making mistakes.
And reevaluate.
And be like, well, it worked in my head, so make it work here.
Yeah.
Tom, when you... You know, in your limited time as a director, when you're approaching a piece, what's your first step of your process?
I think for me, my first step is I'll read the script and then reread it and read it again, and then put it down, step away from it for like a week or so, and then pick it up and go through it again with a kind of a clean head to it and notice what jumps out. And then from there, I tend to kind of come at it from a designer perspective, thinking about, you know, set and lighting pieces. Because for me, the set tends to kind of shape how I'm going to block a piece. If it's very symmetrical and straight, I tend to have blocking that's more curved or rounded to it to kind of counteract that sharpness to it. And conversely to that, if it's more rounded and asymmetrical, having kind of more exact, pretty symmetrical pictures on it. So I think that's kind of my approach to things, and then jumping in with actors at that point. I always prefer to have actors in off book because you can get more done at that point. But again, you're limited by time constraints and stuff at that point.
Right.
But I haven't had enough full directing experience to
I'm kind of the opposite, and I think it's just because I actually, you know, blocking and stage picture is like the thing that I like struggle with the most, and because the thing I care most about is the acting and the story and the plot and the characters. So I start after, you know, as you said, having read the script 6 or 7 times backwards and forwards, read individual scenes and try to break things down. I start with the acting and the progression of the characters and making sure that I'm going to understand what I need to cast this show and what I need an actor to be able to do and the extremes that they're going to be able have to be taken to make sure that I'm going to put the right actors on stage for this particular production. And then once I'm in rehearsals, I get very skeleton blocking, and then I try to fix it as I'm going,
right?
Which is why I, you know, like when I'm working on a musical, I try to give my choreographer more things than not, because like when I'm if I'm staging a musical number, even if it's kind of more of a park and bark, I'm still trying to look at it like a scene, and I gotta, you know, I'm like, I'm gonna give you something, but know that it's gonna get adjusted because,
right,
you know, I don't have eventually I do have these like clear things, but like when I'm really focusing on things, I'm looking at, again, like, what's the relationship here? What's the interpersonal? What does this character want? I think acting coaching first and making sure I have the right actors, because to me, if I have the right actors, everything else will fall in line.
See, I tend to trust that I had the right actors from the audition, which isn't always the case and tends to bite me from stuff I've done in the past. But I also try and give the actors as many things up front as possible.
Yeah.
So that way they can then go and make a lot of decisions, which I can then scale back or direct to specific areas.
I feel like I have to know, as I said, I got to know the script inside and out, backwards and forwards. And there's actually a book, I believe it's by David Ball, called Backwards and Forwards, that talks about how to read a script for the purpose of directing,
right,
and how things are connected. And I really like his approach there. And like the biggest thing I took away from that book is just that, again, not that I necessarily need to be able to answer every question when it's asked for me, but I need to know where the answer is going to lie. So being able to, you know, go to an actor and be able to justify the choices, or when they're like, why does this happen? And I got to be able to go, because on page 4 you said this, so of course that has to be the payoff. Mm-hmm. And like, you're motivated by X, Y, and Z.
Right.
That's why you gotta know the script intimately, which is why mm-hmm. one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given was you cannot direct a piece you're not in love with.
Right.
Because you have to tear this apart and put it back together and spend so much time with it that if you don't absolutely love the play you're working on, you're not going to want to put in the countless hours mm-hmm. deconstructing and constructing the script.
Right. You have to put a lot of analysis into that script and really tear it apart and figure out exactly what that next adjacent domino is.
Mm.
What's that direct cause for this specific action, and how does that influence the next specific thing?
Yes.
And being able to trace all of that.
So when you... I think this is like a term that gets thrown around a lot, and not everybody has like a clear definition of it, but like, if you're watching a show and you feel it is underdirected, what does that mean when you're watching the performance and you're like seeing, if you were gonna critique the directing and say, oh, this is on the director, mm-hmm. sometimes a hard thing to judge.
Yeah.
But if you were critiquing a piece and you were either going to give praise or criticism to the director, what sorts of things are you looking at?
I'm looking at a couple different things. I'm looking at, is, you know, for entrances and exits, is it all the, you know, geography of your world lining up? You know, if I go in one entrance and then, you know, one area and then go out that same area, I should be going back to the same place, or at least a very, very similar, like, trail kind of thing back to it. If we're, you know, I'm entering the house from one way and then going out that same way to enter deeper into the house, it kind of breaks stuff for me. And at the same time, kind of watching the actors, if you can kind of see that impulse for them to do something and then they don't act on it, I tend to blame the director for that, even though I'm guilty as an actor of not acting on impulses that I should. But I tend to think that that's a director should have kind of picked up on that and driven that more, carrying that out. And then just making sure that all the design elements fit everything that's being created. You know, the lights and the set and the actors and the blocking all needs to complement each other and work together, as opposed to being its own individual pieces.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Good summary there.
Do you want to weigh in on what you think you would notice as a, coming at from a director perspective, which I believe
I'm seeing things, again, I think it's more helpful if I like know the show,
mm-hmm.
and again, when I can go like, wait, that doesn't make sense with a choice, like, or that doesn't make sense with like what was said earlier or things that were established,
mm-hmm.
and I think you're right, there is a, like, if a scene absolutely like isn't, if like a one particular scene isn't absolutely working, but like in other scenes the actor was working well, I will chalk that up to directing.
Mm-hmm.
If like beginning to end a character isn't working, I will blame the actor. But if right. there's like, I can remember just like watching a specific production, I won't name names, watching a specific production, and there was just this one scene, like the rest of the show the actor was brilliant, but then there was this one scene where he blended in with the scenery, and I'm just like, this scene is not about what you were told it was about,
mm-hmm.
and you were not given enough direction, and if somebody just whispered three sentences in your ear, this scene could steal the show right. and be super important to your character journey,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't. And it showed, like, it was, it should have been this really powerful moment, and instead it was used as a transition.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ugh, I want to help you.
It's always tough knowing where something can be when you're watching it and being like, oh, if there was just that one, if something was said just a little differently, or if this one thing was thought about, it would have changed everything for the scene.
And a lot of times that's my struggle when I'm stage managing for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to step on toes. I don't want to, you know, call anyone out on something. Or just as an actor too, you know, actors act, actors don't direct, you don't give notes to other actors, you don't give
notes to the director about things, and sometimes that's a hard impulse to stifle. But I'm just like, oh God, and you just want to scream, and it's just like, oh God, the answer's right in front of you.
Yeah,
but you're missing it, and like, but I mean, who says I'm right all the time? Like, I'm sure I mean I get things wrong all the time. I'm be the first person to tell you that I'm not infallible. So like, I would hope I would have someone that could point things out. That's what I, as a director, I usually just like having a second person in the room that I can just go to and be like, why isn't this working? Like, what am I missing here? Usually, hopefully, you know, if I've got a stage manager that has some understanding of theater, they can do that. Or sometimes you have to bring in another director at some point in your rehearsal process and just go like, I've hit a wall and I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Can you just come watch this scene and tell me what doesn't work? And I've done that to other people's things. In fact, I think I do that better than I do directing my own work. Just when somebody's like, come tell me what I'm doing wrong. Great, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you think the problem is actor A when it's really actor B is uncomfortable. Oh, yeah. If you can solve that, then the scene will click. Oh, yeah, wow, I thought, yeah, okay, great. And I think it's easy to, again, but because I do think that that's a big part of directing, is identifying problems and fixing them.
Yep.
As you're building a piece. Again, I trust that the actors are going to give me, if I've cast the right people, they're going to give me at least like 75% right answers the first time we put things together. And then I just go, no, that doesn't work. No, that doesn't work. Okay, let's fix that. Let's try something else there. I understand what you're going for, but that's not, you know, coherent.
Right.
So just a big part of directing is identifying problems, but then also being able to justify why they are problems. If it's just, I don't like it. Or just like, wasn't what I saw in my head. I don't think that's a justification. And I want anyone that comes to me, again, as when I'm a director, if I give you a piece of direction and you can prove to me that, you know, the choice you're making makes more sense, whether you're an actor, a designer, I can be swayed. And I have been swayed. But if you're just like, no, this is how I'm doing it. This is, I put that set piece over here and I want it there. And I'm just, okay, but can it go over there? Because my design says it's here. And just, but what does it matter? Because that's how I drew it.
I'm like, okay, great.
Great, yeah. Okay, yep. All right, yep, that's okay. Or just like, you know, hey, could you give me, you know, could you do that more positive? Does it the exact same way. Could you be more in love with them? Does it the exact same way.
It's important, too, that as you're going through the process, you just get fresh eyes on things. I mean, because it's so easy to get so focused on the big picture that you lose little stuff. And conversely, you get so focused on something small in this one scene and miss kind of the big picture of that. So having somebody that's, you know, fresh to it that can go, oh, well, it's this.
Yes.
Because they haven't spent as much time working on it, and it kind of jumps out to them more. It's important to get that as well.
And a technique that I would love to be able to use more often, speaking of eyes, is I think I read it in a Viola Spolin book, where she likes to do blind runs where she faced away from the stage, and she says that like just listening to the dialogue, you should still be able to follow all of the stage action if you directed it correctly. And I mean, at least with like New Space, when we were doing the table reads, because we did a lot of table reads, I did one table read where I just laid back in the chair and closed my eyes because I just wanted to hear it. And like Marjorie looked at me, she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I need to hear it. Right. I need to hear the action. And like if the voice acting isn't good, then like once it's on its feet, who cares? It's not going to work.
Right.
So you can solve a lot of problems by removing your eyes. And then I think you can do the same thing where you can remove a lot of you can discover a lot of problems by removing your ears. If you don't speak Spanish, you watch something on like Telemundo and you should still be able to kind of get the gist of the story if it's well acted and well directed. And it's the same thing. You should be able to sit in the back of the house, put your headphones in with you know, the sounds of the ocean or something in a scene, you should still be able to get the sense of a scene. And if not, then you find out where your visual prop, like your blocking problems are, mm-hmm. where your staging problems are. If an actor isn't giving enough, or if they're not really connected, when you can remove a sense like that. I wish there were more than two senses you could apply in that, right. Because you could then, you know, try with other things, but I don't think it really matters what the actors smell like.
Yeah, also don't taste the actors.
No, they frown on that. Tom, as an actor, is there any recurring issue you've seen across the number of different directors that you've worked with that are just like something you wish either directors did more of or did less of, or just something you feel like a lot of directors forget about coaching and working with actors?
I mean, there's not something that's been across the entire gamut of directors I've worked with. I think there tends to be this idea that when you're a director, it's I'm just a director, I'm just directing, and you forget about experiences you've had as an actor, you forget about experiences you've had as a designer and, you know, as a lighting person, and you need to really pull on all of that and not just focus on, oh, I'm directing, so I have to shut all those other things out. Because once you do that, you miss the ability to relate to these other aspects of what you're dealing with. So I think that would probably be the commonality between them.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, the director wears many hats. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to remember you're the director, but you're also the actor coach. You also have to be the master designer. You have to communicate with your designers, communicate with your actors. Sometimes you have to be the psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to be the marriage counselor between two actors. Actors have fragile egos. Sometimes you gotta play nice. Some actors need their asses kicked. Mm-hmm. Some actors need to be coddled.
Right. And I know I've been super guilty of that when I've been directing stuff where it's like, oh, if I was acting, the impulse would be to do this. It's like, oh, well, I can't just force that on somebody.
Right.
It's like, but if it's an impulse, then it is. And, you know, you have to be able to separate what's just your choice as opposed to what's an impulse and what the script's doing. And it's so easy to lose that in just thinking of, oh, I have to just be this.
Yeah.
So you've definitely had more experience with directing than I have. I mean, what do you think you've done well with stuff that you've directed? And what do you think, looking back, stuff that you've been able to look back and be like, oh, this was a mistake, let me learn from this.
Oh, I do that. I do that every opening night.
Mm-hmm.
Every opening night, I want to sit in the back of the house, away from everybody else, maybe with like my choreographer or something like that. And I mentally make what I call the 1 day, 1 week, 1 month list,
mm-hmm.
where I'm like, if I had one more day of rehearsal, what would I have fixed? If I had one more week of rehearsal, what would I have fixed? If I had one more month of rehearsal, what would I have fixed? And just like, oh, that doesn't work. Like, I'm just super critical in that moment. And I'm evaluating it. So when I go to my next project, I want to be able to not make those same mistakes and try to work more efficiently. I think over the years, I've gotten better at communicating with my designers, standing up and being able to justify what I need. I think I still struggle with my first round blocking, mm-hmm. and making some visual things. Sometimes I can get sidetracked in a rehearsal.
Right.
And I need a stage manager or an assistant director that's gonna, you know, go, hey, you need to start rehearsal now or something like that. Or, cut off my side stories. I ramble. Just, you know, I enjoy the interaction. Those are things definitely work on. I mean, I think I've gotten better at my visual storytelling and I'm definitely still as bad as at rambling and wasting a lot of time in rehearsal, but maybe not, you know, necessarily not, you know, diving right into things. Yes.
Hey Q-Zero fans, this is Artistic Associate Tom Locke coming to you, asking if you were wondering how you can join the revolution. The easiest way to join the revolution is to become a Q-Zero member today. By becoming a member, you're going to help us bring more work to you. Included with that are many great benefits, including our newsletter, merchandise, signed memorabilia, exclusive podcasts, exclusive videos, access to our New Works blog, and so much more.
We have two different options that you can use to become a member. One is our annual option through our GoFundMe, or we also now offer a monthly option through our Patreon, starting at as low as just $2 a month. Search Q0 on either GoFundMe or Patreon, or check out the links in the show description. Sign up today and join the revolution.
You brought up something interesting in there that I don't think we've touched on yet. I mean, we've talked about what we look for with a director as far as acting goes, as far as designing goes. But from your experience with stage managing, what do you look for with a good director when you're a stage manager?
When I am the stage manager, I want a director that is going to be very clear to me with their expectations and what they want from me, because I feel every director has different expectations and wants from their stage manager. I want them, secondly, I need their 100% trust and faith. In a previous podcast, I think I equated, you know, the director is the captain of the ship, but the stage manager is the pilot. And it is a big undertaking when they give you their baby. They put you in charge of the show, but they need to be able to trust you. I want them to be very clear with their, you know, the, to me, the stage manager, and I mean, this could be a whole other podcast, is what makes a good stage manager, but the stage manager needs to be the hub of all communication. All interdepartment communication goes in through the stage manager, and they need to be made aware of everything. So I want a director that's going to tell me things, be on time with getting back to me, again, lay out the expectations well, and will defer to me when they need to be deferred to, when I'm like, okay, we need to be on schedule, or hey, that's, you know, you didn't communicate that. That's going to, you know, give me the courtesy and not use me as just kind of a person that does all the things that they don't have the time to do. Which is something I would hate in any job, which I've had in a lot of different jobs. But I think, so that's to me. And then as a director, what makes a good stage manager is I really enjoy, you know, I want a really good type A stage manager that's going to take great notes, put out the, get rehearsal reports out on time, have the right details in the rehearsal reports, can call a solid show, can handle the pressure of things. I think, and then going back to being a stage manager, I want a director that's going to be clear with me and tell me what I'm doing wrong in a way that I can fix it, and not like getting angry and berating me when things are not going well.
Right.
I want them to be able to go like, hey, you were behind on the cues during the dance break. I don't think you're hearing the drums. What can we do to make this better? Versus you effed up my lights. Fix it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big difference between that. You know, when it's not, this is a problem, it's, what can we do to solve it?
Right. And it's, I think, an actual dialogue on how to actually fix it, as opposed to just, this is your problem and you need to deal with it.
Yeah. And I try to always, I mean, and even as a director, I try to approach everything like that. You know, I don't say to my actors, like, fix this. It's, okay, it's like, did I not, like, do I need to be doing something differently to get the solution that we need? Like, what are we doing wrong here? What do we, because the director needs to be part of it. Yes, there still is like a, there needs to be like a professional boundary between the actors and the director, but still, like, the director needs to realize that you're a team.
Right.
And you succeed as a team or you fail as a team. So being able to approach things as, okay, what can we do to solve this problem, rather than, this is a problem. Tom, who's the best director you've worked with and why?
I would say that the best director I've worked with, I worked with when I was at school, it was Alex Picard, and she was the best director that I worked with, because she was able to kind of get me to break down my emotional wall that I had when I was acting, and be able to pull more out of me as I was going through stuff, and gave me different ways of looking at things and connecting with things on a personal, individual level, as opposed to just, well, this is where it is kind of thing. And it was, we had that relationship where it was a very honest, very direct with each other kind of thing, where I trusted her and was able to trust in her enough that I could let down those barriers and walls and everything, to move forward with stuff.
No, it's good. That's important that they can make that personal connection.
Yeah. Who is the best director that you've worked with?
I mean, I really enjoy getting to watch David Kay from UNH direct. He was, again, he taught the directing classes, so I'm kind of like a disciple of his. David's biggest strength that we always were mesmerized by was always his ability to improve something by a minor change. Because we'd you know, you'd bring something into directing class that you spent like 3 weeks slaving over, mm-hmm. and David would change 2 seconds of it and take it from good to great. And you'd be like, what happens if you did this? Oh, God. Yeah, we called it when your scene would get decayed. Because he could just... Again, it comes from just his experience, but mm-hmm. it goes back to the thing. As a director needs to be able to just be in the moment, know what works on stage, and, you know, use the tools that they have and be okay with experimenting.
Right.
And be okay with going, try this. No, that didn't work. Try this. No, that didn't work. Try this. That. And then, you know, just being in the moment, keeping everything truthful,
mm-hmm.
Keeping everybody together on the same page. And, just the amount of good practices that I took away from both, you know, being his student, being directed right. by him, were just great. My other favorite thing that he taught was something that I take back, and I can see the number of directors that I've worked with that don't follow this and why I feel that they're ineffective as directors, and that was, every time that you yell, yelling loses power.
Mm-hmm.
And I only saw David yell once, and everybody was afraid for their life, because normally he's very, you know, well controlled. And I try to teach that to my students when they're in like leadership positions. I'm like, if you just keep yelling at them, they're eventually going to tune you out. But if, you know, if you've only yelling when you've got to communicate with them, you've got to lead them. And then when you do yell, they're going to listen, because that's not something you do. I mean, not that I want to say like I fake anything, but I also do feel that it's more effective to get, how should I say, misbehaving actors to do what you want if, one, you have their respect, and then, two, if you tell them that they've disappointed you.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're just angry, anybody can get angry. Anger just comes. But if they're disappointed, it's just, it eats at you so much more. So just being able to be like, I'm not mad. I just thought you were... You could do more. Mm-hmm. I'm disappointed, but okay. You know, we'll settle for mediocre. And then, and then you're going to go home and go like, ah, no, and it's going to eat at you. But if I just yelled at you, you're just going to, ah, Dan's an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was an important trait. And I've seen that in directors. You know, I brought it up on the last episode when I was, you know, I said that I hid under the tech table during mm-hmm. a show I was lighting designing, because the director was just yelling at people over something that wasn't their fault, and she just felt that she needed to yell and berate and demean everybody, and I'm just like, why? What is this accomplishing? And I hid under the table, and I'm just like, I can't watch this. I can't watch you yell at these actors over this needlessly complicated set change. Right. Like, it's because the thing in your head doesn't work in reality. It doesn't matter how long you yell at them.
Mm-hmm.
You're just making them miserable.
Right. Now, have you seen any productions that didn't have a director, or was just all the actors self-directed stuff? And if so, what happened to that production with the result of not having a director?
Well, I've seen very little things that were like, or if you want to call it like a collaborative production or group directing. And then I think on the sort of the same coin is when the director is also in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I loathe that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I've seen some decently well done small collaborative theater when it's clear that all of the actors have a good working respect for each other, right, and are willing to play and have good acting instincts and can play off each other. I mean, that's kind of how we approached, you know, we approach our Guerrilla Shakespeare stuff. I'm like, yep. I'm like, I'm the director, but I'm really only going to give like very little things. I want you to just play off your impulses, and then I'm just going to encourage you to, you know, do things. Just don't make anybody uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I've seen, you know, decently productions like that. Then I've also just seen actors that are like, I don't need a director, and they just give these overly self-indulgent and internalized performances that have nothing that makes good acting. They have no vulnerability, they have no honesty and truth, because they aren't, there's no objectivity. Right. It's the same thing when people are directing themselves. I've directed myself once and I never want to do it again. Mm-hmm. It was out of necessity. Right. When we did Fame at the high school, we needed to cast teachers as the teachers because we didn't have any students that could play the teachers. And I hated the fact, hated being these scenes. I'm like, this isn't right. I need to be, especially when I'm like, I got to direct this scene, but I also have to be in the scene. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I'm not like a huge part, but I know like, we talk often about the like the Kenneth Branagh movies, and I'm like, I can't watch a movie that has Kenneth Branagh in it that he also directed, because he just gets up there and, I'm going to give you the clean version of this, he's just up there for his own pleasure, and he's just and it's just so indulgent and not reined in and, you know, honest, but it, because nobody told him no. Mm-hmm. Nobody, like, if you're going to direct yourself, you need to have, I would say, like, an assistant director that directs all the scenes you're in, that you give 100% trust to. It's why I struggled with the concept of letting somebody else direct me in something I've written. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like, oh, I wrote it for me, I know what I'm doing, and, like, just trying to have that objectivity, it would be interesting. Right. What are your thoughts on either self-directed or collaborative directed?
Yeah, I think self-directing is, it's so ego-driven is really what it is. Mm. Is I picked and put up this piece that I said I was going to direct, but I did it because I want to play this role, and that's why they do that, and you lose a lot of pieces to that.
Mm. We've all seen The Room.
Yep.
Tommy Wiseau.
But then there's things that I've seen at the... what is it? The American Shakespeare Center, the ASC down in Virginia, during their Renaissance season. And what they do is they don't have a director. It's all actors. They get cue scripts. They put up 5 shows that they run in rep that they, you know, they do everything themselves. So they pull props. There's not really a lot of set stuff. There's not a lot of lighting stuff.
I feel that works with Shakespeare, because it's so well written. People know those characters. There's a lot of meat in the script. Mm-hmm. And in order to do Shakespeare, you have to have a high understanding of acting and the language. Mm-hmm. And then you also have to be willing to play off of things.
Right. And I think with this... the pieces that I've seen there have been beautiful, and, you know, doing 5 shows in rep that you just get cue scripts for, that you have, you know, maybe 20 hours of rehearsal for each one, is, like, insane to me. But there are pieces to it that you go, well, it was good. You know, I missed this connection, or these pieces didn't line up fully. So you still, even at, you know, the... I would say arguably the ASC is one of the top Shakespeare places in the country. And even at that level, you still see some of those pieces missing without having that director there. Mm. That's not to say it's not good. It's everything I've seen there's been incredible. But there's still those things that you could have seen differently.
The minor stuff that gets lost. So we're coming up on almost having an hour recording this. So I guess, you know, I'm probably going to trim a fair number of it.
Right.
Let's wrap it up. I do hope sometime in the future we can get 3 or 4 directors here, and we can do a round table on just directing. Maybe we could have you lead that, as a non-director, just to probe the directors. But final thoughts, Tom, directing, what makes a good director? What makes a bad director? What is the job of a director? If you just have to sum up, you know, everything here, just something else that you need to get off your chest about directing.
You know, I think it's just be honest, communicate, and... don't just force things, but also don't just sit back and let a bunch of things happen. Find
find the middle ground on everything.
Great. Yeah. Just be present.
Be present in the moment.
I mean, I think 90% of both good acting and good directing is just paying attention and listening to everybody else in the room.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Tom, thanks for, you know, sharing a pizza and sharing this
thanks
discussion
for having
tonight.
Me.
Yeah. hope everybody enjoyed this. Things to plug again. We'll have closed New Space. We're getting ready for Guerrilla Shakespeare 2.
Thanks so much for coming to New Space.
Yes, thanks for coming to New Space. It was a wild success. Getting ready for Guerrilla Shakespeare 2, Much Ado About Nothing.
Come see it.
Guerrilla Shakespeare 3, TBA. Proof will go up the first weekend in May. Get your tickets early for that one. It's going to be
incredible.
Yeah. And if you haven't already done so, and if you've liked what you heard and want more of it, make sure you check out our Patreon. You can become a member, get some exclusive podcast content, the New Works blog, the newsletter, all other fun sorts of things. Memberships start as low as $2 a month, so check out the Patreon. Tom, do you have anything else to plug before we go away?
No.
Great, because Q0 consumes our lives and we have no time for fun or work. And
Q0 is fun and we love it.
Yeah. So, thanks, Tom, again. This is Artistic Director Dan Pelletier signing off, because as we always say, please support your local theater. Join the revolution.